Previously on Taz Royale.
I've seen what you'll do with the powers of the Octave.
Yes.
I will not allow you to control us.
Klaxon is pulled under the elevated water level. You see a look on Rhyme's unmasked face of pure panic as they are pulled under.
How badly do you want Tuba to survive?
It is of the utmost importance to me.
And then I throw him in.
It is time now for you victorious aspirants to receive your just reward.
The tower rises upward like a rocket high above the Octave Ziggurat. Hello and welcome back to Taz Royale, our Battle Royale winner-take-all season of the Adventure Zone. When last you joined us, it was like a month ago, and our heroes, if we can still call them that, finished up and survived and claimed victory in the Trial of Transmutation. Four aspirants fell in your group of 12, and that's very sad. I had big plans for Randolph, and he's dead. He's dead now, and he's in hell too.
Oh man,
so, I forgot about that.
Well, he probably deserved it then, right? Because people don't get punished unless they deserve it. So
he's not in hell. He's not in hell. Nobody's in hell.
Nobody.
Yeah, and that's an important story beat. We're gonna come back to
because everybody is so good.
Yes. No. After surviving the trial, the golden tower that was submerged inside of the lake of the Octave Ziggurat Island turned into a bit of a rocket and blasted off into the sky. And that is where you all are right now. Through the porthole windows of this ascending golden tower, you all watch as the sky begins to grow dark as you get higher, the atmosphere grows thin. You struggle to stay on your feet as this building launches upward into the sky. You see Set, the Octave who sort of administered this trial, the golden scarab, appears to be unperturbed by this motion. He's just hovering with his scarab wings beside one of these windows, watching the flight intently. And he says,
"You are about to breathe rarefied air. No one living save for the eight Octaves have ever witnessed the world beyond the fold's foggy border. And now that you have survived half of the Conclave's trials, it is prudent that you understand the extent of our responsibilities."
And then, in an instant, the tower stops rising. Its momentum and your momentum are brought to sort of an immediate, impossible halt. And the walls of the tower begin to shift, twisting and lowering like blossoming flower petals until they lay flat, forming these eight round observation decks branching off of the tower floor. You all are thousands of feet off the ground, higher significantly than the Ziggurat Island that floats in the sky below. Looking down from your position, you all can see the fold, the sort of crowded circular expanse that comprises the entire world that you all have lived in your whole lives. You see the southern hive lands of your origin, Helgramet. You see the Titan range that you and your Goliath kin call home, Lorevith. Right smack dab at the center of the fold, you see the crossroads, Rictus, which is the Ravenwood family's sort of undead seat of power. All of these, you know, cities and structures and different sort of land features, they are all really tightly packed inside of this cylinder of fog that is swirling about it like the eye of a hurricane. Beyond that wall of fog, you all see a world that is entirely unfamiliar. It is a world of frozen ash. There are oceans lying flat, running across a shoreline that you see peppered with a few cities that are nearly larger than the entire fold itself. And these cities have these tall buildings of stone and glass that reach up toward the height of the floating ziggurat. You see a petrified forest, these massive conifer trees, tall as those buildings, stretching out beyond the horizon. You see mountains that dwarf those of the Titan Range that are silhouetted in the distance by the sun, which is shining down on just this barren, empty, lifeless world. And Set turns to face the group of survivors here and says,
32 generations ago, our world received the gift of magic in the wake of a great calamity, but it was mankind's empowerment that proved its greatest threat. Without control of that magic, chaos tore the world apart, but attempts to control that magic led to wars of inconceivable scale. Wizards raised insectoid warriors from the land to fight their wars until the first broodmother led those warriors in revolt. Thus were the Thrykeen born. Human soldiers were imbued with arcane physical enhancements, growing in size, becoming the first Goliaths. So much of the world we know now is a result of those wars. But the world, unable to sustain its inhabitants any longer, this world, this planet of Earth, began to die. Blight spread across its surface, destroying all life in its path. It was only by the intervention of the original Octave, the eight greatest magical minds of there or any time, that anything survived. They raised the fog wall, forming the fold where they continued to serve as shepherds and wardens.
Rictus raises his hand.
Yes, Rictus.
Two questions of clarification. One, so there was a calamity, then magic came, and then there was a war after that?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, and then you said of Earth. Is that with a capital E, just for like, I don't know, if we ever record this for posterity and people want to know, you know, it's just like...
Yeah, it is a proper noun, so yes, I suppose capitalization would be prudent.
Okay, so that's the name of the planet that we're on, is Earth?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Cool, I guess I'd never learned that in school or whatever. I was homeschooled.
Sure, I had heard that that's how things worked in the Crossroads, very insular. You must understand, this is what all makes the brutality of this conclave so necessary. In bringing you all here and making you all compete in this way, 63 wizards will die. 63 spells will be purged from the face of the world, ensuring that the unchecked magical annihilation that claimed the Earth does not repeat itself within the borders of the fold. And for the one wizard who will be granted limitless power, their worthiness must be guaranteed through hardship and sacrifice. We will be returning to the ziggurat momentarily. Take a moment to enjoy this view. You will likely never see it again. And celebrate your victory in the trial of transmutation. The eight of you have earned it. And he turns back to face the world below.
Rictus points at his house. That's my house. This thing, in case anyone was wondering, I can see my house. It's right there.
What does it look like? What do the crossroads sort of look like? I imagine sort of, what is the name of the Undercity? Like that sort of dead vibe, but it may be something completely different.
No, it's not far off. So the Breathless Fields, one, like there's, you know, some scraggly trees or whatever with some... No, you know what? It's a field full of dead bodies. There's good Jesus. Soil there. No, I mean it is. It's a dang huge graveyard. Dude. It's like okay, the cool. graveyard of the fold. So there's right. lots of fertilizer in there. So the trees, sure. They're like a really dark green, but lush. They've grown, yeah, quite lush, but there's no wind
that's
that
beautiful.
Blows through there. So they're like completely still, and you can cool. see like the literal two like wide crossed roads.
Yeah.
That are coming from kingdoms all around. Okay. Where people bring their dead, and you can see like the sections a little bit because it's a huge structure, you know, of graveyards. Yeah. So you can see where they're like sectioned off by kingdom.
Cool.
And in the center of that crossroads, you can see this might surprise you, gothic looking like keep castle that is surrounded in its own ring with then like family crypts and specialty crypts within the ring.
Awesome.
Yeah.
You are looking down at this and you hear a voice right beside your ear and it says,
I've never seen it this high up.
Oh, it's, God.
I'm sorry.
I was staring at my house.
You look over and you see the tiny, tiny ghost of your great, 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 great grandfather, I think, is how many greats we put on that?
Yeah, it's a lot. Richter's Ravenwood the first.
Yeah, I guess he wouldn't be that far removed from you. He would be your great grandfather, I suppose.
No, great, great. Wait, my father?
If he's the first.
My grandfather. My great grandfather. My great, great grandfather.
Okay, so yeah, sure. He looks down sort of wistfully down at the crossroads, and he says,
we built an amazing thing, didn't we? The Ravenwoods. Such incredible work happens there. You must be so proud to see it from on high.
Well, I mean, it just keeps getting bigger, I think, is, you know, as we expand out. The graveyards,
It's a booming business. Death, I suppose.
Yeah, it's unavoidable. Like death in Texas, you know?
Excuse me.
Yeah?
I know I'm not here, but people are dying to get into it.
That's my great-grandfather.
That's
Ravenwood II.
He appears on your shoulder. He's a little bit bigger because, again, as ghosts get older, they get smaller, and so he's like a tiny bit bigger.
Sorry.
No, you are always the jokester. Yeah.
Sorry, dust.
They both look down for a moment and then poof back into the ethereal sort of...
Wait, am I considered racist now?
He's gone before he can answer that question.
Well, wait, can I talk to my great-great-grandfather one more time?
The small one?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
I only have 5 seconds left.
Not you. He's the racist one. It just seems like such a waste with what we can do. You know what I mean? The death, it just happens. And then that's done. What if we, like, there's so much we could do with the stuff we could do to, I don't know, utilize the afterlife better.
You are so young and you are so far from death, Rictus. It is hard for you to have perspective on this, but we are already doing so much. Look at me, he says and gestures to himself. I am a
fantastic. Yeah, you're totally ripped.
Well, no, I mean, yes, oh. I've been hitting the little gym, the little spectral gym, and I'm pretty proud of my gains, but I persist well beyond death, as shall you, as shall all the Ravenwoods. This is our birthright. This is the power we have claimed, and it is an extraordinary thing, so we may continue to live on ad infinitum, becoming ever smaller, yes, which is, we're still trying to figure out why that keeps happening, but, This is what we are doing with that power, and it is an amazing thing.
But we could do it for so many more people.
There are some questions of sustainability there, but I have always admired your altruistic sort of nature, Rictus. It will serve you well as a warden of the dead lands once it is your turn to take that seat. Assuming, of course, you survive these trials, which you've done so spectacularly well at so far. I'm so proud.
He goes to pinch your cheek, but doesn't because it's intangible.
So incredible. Your canniness, your cutthroat nature. It's you're really coming into your own, great-great-grandson. I'm very proud.
Yeah, but, you know.
And he stretches and he puts on a headband. He says, well, I've got to hit the elliptical. It's my turn on the machine. Your great-grandpa is kind of a hog, of a lunkhead at the gym, so.
If you get a chance, will you kind of pop in to the keep and let him know how I'm doing and check on...
Oh, I've kept them abreast of your progress, and they are all...
sorry, what did you say? Abreast?
No, okay. God, I'm
wait,
gonna...
Wait, hold
no,
on, he grabs your great-grandpa.
He grabs your great-grandpa, just tugs him into a little cloud. All right, come on, come on.
Who's talking about breasts?
Oh, no.
I don't know him.
Great, no way. You don't want to know it. This tiny, inch-high ghost, old as shit, like, floats in front of you. He grabs...
Oh, that's... I mean, that's Rictus Zero. We got to get out of here. This is too much.
Son, is that you?
You.
He's older than the sun.
He doesn't understand what the...
So, what is it? So
hello, moon.
Lorevith, you feel a tug on your tunic that you're wearing and look down and see the tear-stained face of Dubert Sweetleaf. He is looking up at you. He looks confused. He looks obviously like very, very heartbroken. And he says,
excuse me, sir, Lorevith, would you, may I speak to you for a moment?
Of course, Duba. How can I help you?
I was incapacitated during the trial when I fell. I landed, it knocked the wind out of me, and it hit, I hit my head, and it was hard to follow what happened, but what happened to Master Randolph? I saw him fall, and I saw him vanish, and I just didn't, did you see, did someone push
much
him? Did
like
someone
the rest
him?
Of us, Stupa. Like all in the room, I was blinded by your friend's light, which was a very kind act that I think he did to spare you the visual memory of him being eaten to death by eels in Dubai. If that's not love, I don't know what is.
I suppose that is a kindness. I definitely would have been pretty messed up had I seen that. But he was the greatest wizard I've ever known. I don't understand how anyone could have gotten the better of him. Did you see who who killed him?
Duba, it's natural to be asking a lot of questions right now. Grief comes in many forms. I think the important thing here is to realize that your friend perished so that you, Duba Sweetleaf, could live on. And Duba, I couldn't ascertain the nature of your greatness before your pal had his unfortunate slip. But I am committed to finding out why you, Duba Sweetleaf, are the most important boy alive.
I want to roll here, and it's not to like, I don't know if it's deception, right? Because it's, I don't think he suspects you at all. He did not see what was happening. He was a full level lower than you all. All he saw was Randolph falling into the water. But to like, you know, put this issue to bed, I think.
Performance, maybe?
A performance check would be great, right? You're feigning.
I have zero in all this stuff, so let me just take a roll. It's a 13.
I mean, let me roll an insight for him to contest that, and we'll see how it goes. I'll roll it on the table.
Ooh.
All right, that's just an 11. Yeah, he looks up at you, his cheeks glistening with tears. He says, "I suppose you're right, Master Lorevith. We should focus on the gift he gave us in sort of ensuring that we moved on." And
thank you, Duba. Thank you, Duba, for believing in me, your faith in me. If it means anything to you, I would have fully burned an inspiration point if you hadn't.
I'm not sure what that means, sir, but
me neither, Duba. But I think someday we will, Duba. You are all questions and enigma, but I will root you out, Duba.
I must ask, may I continue working with you, Master Lorevith, moving forward? I am a little guy, and I am very scared. All I want is to return home to the hills that bore me, to eat the honey sweet pies of Madame Sugarfoot's bakery and drink delicious frosty pints of amber draughts at the Pincer and Pike and smell the breeze through the hive hills when the nectar bills bloom. I wish to go back very badly to the hills, Master Lorefin.
Duba, were it up to me, I would strap you to my back like a baby in a papoose.
Of course.
I should warn you, though, Duba, you're welcome to tag along, but we can never go back to the home in our memory, Duba. I will warn you.
I can, actually. It's right there. Look, Master Lorovit.
And he points down.
Oh, it's on fire. Oh, no, it's being attacked by dragons.
No, it's not. You can't do that.
Oh, no.
To the Teemo Shire.
Duba, do you wish to flee this contest?
Is that possible? I came here because I was beckoned, and I was told that I had no option in the matter, but that Master Randolph, when he was also summoned, he told me that he would take care of me and ensure my survival. Now that he is gone, I appreciate your assurances, Master Lorovith, but I am terrified, and I do not wish to perish in this strange place. If leaving is possible, I would do so in a heartbeat.
Duba, I need time to think. Yes. I am someone who does not like to lose, Duba, but I recently have begun to think that winning may look different than I anticipated.
I'm not sure what you mean.
All right. Helgrammet, is there anything you want to do before
the
rocket descends?
From the moment that they lifted off, Helgrammet has just been staring out these portals, and he's staring down at the Thrykeen world. And when they hit the very apogee, is that the top?
Nadir?
Nadir's
the bottom.
Oh. The apex of their arc, or going up, he just is like staring down intently, and he starts to shiver and kind of shake, and his arms, his sweet little four little spindly arms kind of suck into his body, and his vestigial wings kind of wrap around him a little, and he falls to the ground, and he's shaking, and it's almost like he is, he almost looks like a cocoon.
Like a cicada.
Yeah, almost, and he keeps saying,
Snicks, Chris, Snicks, Chris,
and he falls to the deck.
Is that something that the other Thrykeen here, who I guess is Scorpo and Set, would and Spider-Man? No, Spider-Man is a human. This is the spider who is a human. The spider who is a spider is still down on the...
There's like Man-Bat Batman territory.
Yes, sure. We still have three. So we've killed off 40 at this point, aspirants, as of this episode. There's still all three spiders.
The Spider-Verse is still going strong.
Yeah. Would they recognize what you are saying? Or is this like a personal, are these names? Or I don't really know how to respond to this without knowing kind of what
that means.
He just keeps
saying this over and over again. And eventually he even stops saying it. Snakes,
Chris.
I'm asking, is that something the other Thrykeen would recognize?
Does it mean something? Yeah.
He's speaking in Thrykeen, yes.
What is he saying in Thrykeen?
So small.
He's
talking about his wiener.
I guess I have to ask, because Travis brought it up. Is he talking about his wiener?
He could be.
Lorevith and Rictus, you both see Helgrammet having this sort of episode. Do you do anything?
I go and check on him. I do have, I know, like, magic and medicine and stuff.
I pull Duber closer so that one of Helgrammet's talons doesn't accidentally graze him during this fit or whatever is going on.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to do a medicine check to see.
Don't look, Duber. It's very upsetting, this bug man.
Okay, give me a medicine check.
This may be some sort of dance.
A 16 plus 4, a gentleman's 20.
Just when you need it the most.
Yeah. I definitely give him a stick or something to bite down on.
Yeah, I mean, a 20 is a very, very high check. Is this a purely sort of psychosomatic kind of episode that Hellgram is having, or is it a...
Yeah.
Okay.
I think in Rictus's experience, having, like, rebound souls to bodies and stuff...
Sure.
Like, a realization... I think that he's had experience seeing people suddenly, like, experience something greater than themselves, or a confusion of realization of, like, life after death, or things like this being brought back to their bodies.
Right.
Yeah. You're right. Yeah. You're coming right up on it. I mean, safe to say, this has never happened. I mean, it's only happened to the eight of us and whoever else has been in these previous trials, but they're seeing their home from outer space, basically.
Yeah.
And I think that would have, at least for Hellgrammet, who had these illusions of grandeur and was all convinced that he was going to be a king of a powerful kingdom, sees just how small not only the kingdom is, but the world. And I think it has really rocked him to his core.
I'm gonna diagnose him with a strong case of perspective.
Scorpo is watching you, Hellgrammet, as you sort of have this episode. You see him, Rick, this sort of approach, and he looks down, kind of conflicted, and he kneels over you, Hellgrammet, and he begins to speak in Thrykeen, which I'm going to just do in our English, if that's okay.
For the people at home. Griffin could do it.
For the people at home.
Yeah.
You hear Scorpo say in this sort of, guttural clicking language, says, Hellgrammet. Why did you escape from your hive?
So small.
Hellgrammet, listen to me. Listen to me, Hellgrammet.
Still not your product, Hellgrammet.
Why did you escape from your hive?
To dominate. To advance. To rule. I am seeking power, but Scorpus, look how small it is. Look how small we are.
He grabs you by your, the shoulders between your your pairs of arms, and pulls you very, very close, and says extremely intently,
"We used to be so much smaller."
He stands as you start to calm down and walks away from you. As the tower begins to descend back down, towards the Octave Ziggurat Island, you see something. Rick, just give me a perception check.
Okay. 15 total.
You see, just sort of like looking around, getting one last look at the, this vision of the world beyond the fog wall. It occurs to you that there is one too many people standing around here on this observation platform. And as you realize this, your eyes lock onto one of these figures who everyone else is either facing outward or, Hellgrammet is sort of doing his thing on the floor. This figure is facing inward and, in fact, staring you down. And the sun is sort of silhouetting them, making them hard to see at first. But as the tower begins to descend and the sun raises up, it shines down on the specter of death itself. It is wearing a cloak of some indiscernible material, black as coal. Its skull is barely visible through its hood, but it's so white that it appears to have like a kind of luminous blue quality to it. And there is something just strange about this figure. It seems like he is moving at like a different frame rate than everything else here.
Mm.
And he looks at you, and you have seen, obviously, this statue of death that you've had dealings with down on the ziggurat before, but this is a real manifest version of that figure.
Without even knowing why, Rictus kneels.
You hear a voice in your mind. That no one else seems to clock. No one else seems to be looking at this figure. It seems to be just entirely happening only to you. You suddenly hear a voice say, "Oh, please. I'm in your debt, technically, Rictus. Rise. We have but a short time to speak." I'm a big boy. I need tempo. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the advertisements here on the Adventure Zone. I'd like to tell you about tempo.
And with us is special guest, J.K. Simmons.
That's not
my tempo.
Well, no.
It's not my tempo.
Have him say, like, that is my tempo.
Oh, that is my tempo. Okay, now J.K., you can
now
leave.
Make him say, now make oh, him say, wait, Griffin's. Make him say, Griffin's the best.
And Griffin's also the best. Him, give me pictures of Spider-Man.
You didn't tell him to say that. That was you.
He's
doing
on the
voice.
Headphones.
Okay.
He's got his own cans. He brought them from home.
Okay.
He's a professional.
Why do you guys like this?
What do you
Can
mean?
Can you just do a normal advertisement? Can you do like a normal, just do a normal ad?
Okay. So yeah, I'm a busy guy and so is Travis. He knows J.K. Simmons. So when you're busy and you're on the go and you want to eat good food, but you only have like 2 minutes to heat it up, you can still have really yummy stuff thanks to Tempo. This is my tempo. I'm talking about Tuscan bacon mushroom chicken.
Ooh.
I'm talking about five spice glazed chicken thighs.
Yeah, yes.
They got seafood options. They got chili shrimp rice bowl. They got so many stuff. They got protein pack stuff. They're always swapping around the menu, so you can always like try out new stuff, and it all tastes really good. And you can get it ready like really, really fast.
And even J.K. Simmons likes it. He's the pickiest eater I know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. He has really specific tastes, and there is a special J.K. Simmons only menu on Tempo.
Yeah, I eat pictures of Spider-Man.
If you go to tempomeals.com, you'll see an option that'll be like the special J.K. Simmons menu. When you click on it, it says, "Are you J.K. Simmons?" It's like a CAPTCHA, and like, "Are you J.K. Simmons?" And it tests you, and if it's not, then it'll be like, "Get the fuck out of here." Get the fuck out of here. This is for JK only, it says.
Wow. So for a limited time, Tempo is offering my listeners 60% off your first box. Go to tempomeals.com/adventure. That's tempomeals.com/adventure for 60% off your first box. Tempomeals.com/adventure. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Guys, I got a mattress from Lisa, the luxury hybrid, and it is changing my life. First, I'm just going to tell you, first of all, it lays flat like this.
Yeah.
A lot of beds that I have had in the past are at a 45-degree angle or worse, Dracula style, 180.
Yeah.
So the Lisa mattress is flat, which we love. The next
that
thing,
is 180. I do just want to say that the flat is 180.
It's way longer than my body.
Okay.
A lot of beds, my head and feet dangle off of them like a child, like Will Ferrell in the film Elf.
Yeah.
The elf beds. This is not like that. This bed is bigger than my body, which is incredible.
Is it thin like a tissue?
No. No. It's comfortable. Like a million tissues.
Whoa.
Sorry, it says here, don't compare it to a million tissues. No, it's got aerated foam channels and an ultra breathable dual spring system. It's like sitting in between the balance of foam and spring. It's like living in the middle, in the mid space. It's the perfect balance. In the Shadowlands. And it can keep you cool. They got a chill hybrid too. If you want to go a little bit cooler,
like me,
advanced cooling, luxury quilt top. If you want,
I'm a chill hybrid.
Yeah.
You're a chill hybrid.
Yeah. Half Travis, half electric.
Go to lisa.com for 20% off mattresses, plus get an extra $50 off with promo code ADVENTURE, exclusive for our listeners. That's LEESA.com, promo code ADVENTURE for 20% off mattress, plus an extra $50 off. Support our show and let them know we sent you after checkout. Lisa.com, promo code ADVENTURE.
And check this out.
That's pretty good, Griffin.
Thanks.
Hey, a couple of quick announcements, too, before we get back to the episode. We've got a bunch of cool stuff over at macromerch.com. If you haven't checked it out, you need to go do that. 10% of all merch proceeds this month will be donated to Border Angels. Macromerch.com, check that out. Also, Griffin's book, The Stowaway, is out now. It's a choose your own adventure. Go to bit.ly/GriffinStowaway and get all the information there or find it at a local bookstore.
Thank you, Travis.
You're welcome, Griffin. And Justin's great, too. He does cool things.
Whatever.
All right. Back to the show.
Hey, what's up, everybody? My name is Mark Gagliardi, and I host We Got This with Mark and Hal on the Maximum Fun Network. Would you like to introduce yourself as well?
My name is Jesse, and I am from Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Hi, Jesse from Minneapolis, Minnesota. Jesse, you are our Maximum Fun Member of the Month.
I'm so delighted to hear that I'm the member of the month. Thank you.
Is there a first episode that you remember?
The pretzel shape episode.
Yeah.
That's pretty classic.
Both of us just killed off each other's answers and went with pretzel rod, which is clearly not the best.
No, that is a terrible pretzel.
As our member of the month, you have a parking spot at Maximum Fun headquarters, as well as a $25 gift card to the Maximum Fun store. We say it at the end of the episode, we wouldn't do it without you and we couldn't do it without you. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Become a Max Fun member now at MaximumFun.org/join.
Hello?
Hello, I'm calling on behalf of the Beef and Dairy Network podcast.
No, I'm sorry. No sales calls. Goodbye.
It's a multi-award-winning podcast featuring guests such as Ted Danson, Nick Offerman, Josie Long.
I don't know what a Josie Long is. And anyway, I'm about to take my mother into town to see Phantom of the Opera at last. You are wasting my time and, even worse, my mother's time. She only has so much time left. She's 98 years old. She's only expected to live for another 20 or 30 years. Mother, get your shoes on. Yes, the orthopedic ones. I don't want to have to carry you home again, do I?
Right, well, if you were looking for a podcast...
Mother, you're not wearing that, are you? It's very revealing, Mother. This is a musical theatre, not a Parisian bordello.
Simply go to MaximumFun.org.
I'm reaching for my Samsung Galaxy 4 as we speak. Mother! Mother, not that hat!
As the tower continues to descend down towards the ziggurat, you see death in front of you, Rictus, and for the first time, you are hearing his voice. All your communications with death have been this, like, you know, almost intangible, abstract, prayer-like thing. You have never heard a voice speaking to you like this. Not this clearly, not this distinctly. And this specter of death floats towards you and says,
our time is limited. We will be unable to speak once you return to the fold. I have no influence there, no power there, so we must make the most of this conversation. Do you understand?
Yes, I do. Oh, I thought you would have more after that.
Yeah, he vanishes. No.
I am revealing myself to you, Rictus, because I believe that you have a certain understanding that your family and those assembled here at the Conclave lack. an appreciation, an understanding, a respect for me, I suppose.
I'd like to think so. I think that, you know, life and death exist in concert with each other.
Not... I understand that you think that, and you think that should be true, but you must understand that that is not true within the Fold, and it has not been true since the Fold's creation. You need to understand that I have no control whatsoever in the world of the Fold. It is not my domain whatsoever. I am being kept out by that. And he gestures towards the fog wall that the tower is sort of rapidly descending back down towards. He says, people are dying in there. I don't know what's happening to their spirits. I am not shepherding them to the great hereafter. The natural order of things, of entropy and decay, those are not being maintained or respected. There is something terribly, terribly wrong happening in the Fold, and I am speaking to you now, Rictus, because I believe that you know there's something wrong with the dynasty that bore you and the world that you live in. I believe that there is a satisfaction with the state of things that you have never received. Let me know if I'm speaking out of turn.
No, you nailed it. No, yeah, nailed it. Got it in one. So what do I do?
As the tower continues to descend, he starts to grow sort of more transparent. The threads binding his cloak appear to be like wilting off of him and floating away like small like feathers. He says, I don't know. I can't do much for you from beyond the fog wall. Passing you my boon took most of my power. I notice you haven't gotten a ton of use out of it. Hopefully it will be of some utility to you, but as long as that remains, and he points towards the fog wall, he says, things in the Fold, this contest, everything, it will be wrong, it will be unnatural. Spirits will gather and decay, and when that happens, terrible, terrible things come as a result. You are one man, Rictus, and I don't begrudge you a mission to save the world, but you must understand that the truth of this world, you will never understand it until you have rid yourself of its influence.
Okay. So I'll work on that and do what I can to get, I guess, the fog wall down. Do you know any way to, like, resist time magic? Because that would help me, like, a ton in that mission.
He... Give me an insight check.
13.
He is trying to speak, trying to answer you. It is no longer, like, audible, the things that he is saying. You can tell just from his body language, which is, again, tough to read because he's a skull and a cloak floating in the air.
So I probably can't read his lips, I guess.
You can't read his lips, no. You can read his chattering teeth.
He's saying...
He seems confused by what you have said. And then, as suddenly as he appeared, he vanishes. The walls of the Golden Tower begin to rise, cutting off your view as you guys lower back down through the atmosphere and come down to a landing back on the island of the Octave Ziggurat. The day continues after your return to
Octave
Ziggurat. Time does not stop. And, you know, during your rest and recovery from the demands of the Trial of Transmutation, you all are sort of vaguely aware of the fact that two more groups are going into the lake to To do this trial, you hear the, you know, the rocket tower taking off and returning two more times. And, you know, with sunset, you get a night's rest. And the next morning, you and all the other aspirants are summoned to the main hall of the ziggurat. You all enter the building and with the others file in between these floating silver disc fountains and holographic busts of your fallen competitors. And you see, you know, each other craning necks, trying to work out who all died from the three groups that faced the Trial of Transmutation the previous day. And that process is made much easier when a bell chimes in the distance and the holograms update with the new casualties. Obviously, from your group, there's the giant teddy Snugjaw, the autonomous alarm system Klaxon, the icy elemental gladiator Rhyme, who had it out for you, Lorevith, but met their end, and the kindly...
If you come for the king, you had best not miss!
You also see the kindly old wizard Randolph, who Duper Sweetleaf is sort of standing in front of, tears beginning to stream down his face again. You realize with some relief that the other eight aspirants who died in the other two groups are mostly unfamiliar to you. The Icy Regent, Baroness Elsie, Stage Magician, Fabulous Pharaoh, Corrigan, the Blade Conjurer, who I think you actually fought in the first trial. There's the truly loathsome pickup artist Enigma, the orb-headed illusionist Orbert.
I know these aren't these people full legal names, but that is what how I'm hearing it in my head. Like, oh, my name?
I'm the truly loathsome pickup artist Enigma.
I'm the Enigma resilient basically... pervert Daryl. That's what everybody knows you.
There's a world in which you guys rolled a different number when you were like picking your final teammate in the Trial of Evocation, and you could Enigma, who was basically Mystery, the pickup artist, could have been a major NPC in this season. There is the Ghostly Penumbra and acclaimed physicist Izzy Newton. These are the fallen you don't quite recognize.
Just imagining you balling up notebook paper and throwing it into a campfire.
I've got a shredder sort of right next to my PC that I'm
feeding. You thought these were good enough to write down and we just like, nah, no thanks.
I'll be honest, these were, I would say, below... like spot 50 on the list of 64. This is when I started to, this is like Scorching Ray Romano level sort
of. You've been in the game long enough to know that if you dangle a Duper Sweetleaf in front of me, you know that I'm going to follow, fucking float on those visible stink lines like Garfield. You know?
Yeah. The only familiar face with these new holograms of the 12 aspirants who fell in this trial, Lorevith, you recognize the dwarven excavator Dusty Underside, your neighbor, in the tents on the outskirts of the Octave Island. That is pretty much the only person here that you all had any association with. Looking around Duber's, the room, it Duber's dawns dad. On you. What's that?
Duber's dad.
Duber's dad. I mean, yeah, Randolph, obviously, you had
so he was his dad.
To deal with. No, not his dad. Looking around the room, it dawns on you all how much emptier it is in here with 40 fewer opponents. And with just a few exceptions, you're mostly familiar with the remaining lot. But as you are sort of running an inventory of who remains, there is a flash from one of the fountains from which emerge these flying multicolored sparks that begin sort of flitting around the room erratically. And from the still waters of this silver fountain, you see a gleaming bald head begin to emerge, followed by a long, lean torso clad in a stylish checkered jacket with just an outrageous number of nested lapels and these two long legs wearing curly boots. The most fashionable man any of you have ever seen emerges from this floating fountain. And begins to hover a good 2 feet above its surface, surrounded by these colorful will-o-wisps. And this man looks around at the 24 aspirants gathered here and says,
"Hello!
Hi.
Hello.
Hello, my name is Coxie
And I will be administering the trial of conjuration. Don't freak out, you guys. You still have your day off, your day of leisure and study and rest. But I must impose, I'm afraid, one order of business before our trial is conducted tomorrow at dawn. The format of this forthcoming trial will be a duel. You and your single opponent will square off in a no-holds-barred combat in an arena randomly assigned to you. You will have until dawn tomorrow to choose your opponent. Now, to keep things interesting, two aspirants must accept each other's challenge. It must be consensual, and they will seal their placement by shaking the hands to which they have affixed their grimoire. And after that, the arrangement will be locked in. It may not be changed. If you are able to find a willing opponent who agrees to your challenge, if you win your duel with them, you will receive a golden award. But if you are unable to find a willing opponent by dawn tomorrow, one will be randomly assigned to you, and the winner of this duel will receive only a copper reward. So, find your opponent, choose wisely, and enjoy your day off.
Excuse me, Coxie.
Oh, yes.
If I may ask, what will the loser of the duels receive?
Death? Anyway, enjoy your day off, you guys. Maybe go down to the Lily and get a signature massage and prepare for tomorrow's duel to the death. And I wish you the best of luck, and I may the odds be ever in your favor.
Great, Coxie!
Yes?
Will there be any rules to this engagement that you can tell us of now?
I said that it's no holds barred, yes? I am not interested in testing your specific knowledge of conjuration magics. I find that to be far too limiting. Any tools at your disposal will be available to you in this battle. But there will be a few twists thrown in, a few just a little twists.
Much like your accent.
Yes, it's implacable, isn't it?
The word's implacable.
Well, you can't place it. Where I'm from, it's implacable because you can't place it.
I mean, it makes
but anyway,
sense.
Choose your opponent in the fight. You will fight to the death and try to find someone and, you know, strike an accord. Because if you can't, we'll just
assign
it for
you. Loud.
You'll still have to do the duel to the death. You just won't get as good of a prize.
Implacable?
Yes. All right. Bye, you guys. And he sinks down into the silver fountain from which he appeared. And suddenly, you all hear, like, pounding footsteps. And, Lorevith, you look over and you see Grakan just barreling at you. And he skids to a halt and holds out his hand. And he says,
this is it, yes? It should be here, yes? Our strength finally measured once and for all. This should be it, yes, at this place, at this time.
Right, yes.
Think of it.
I can see the appeal.
We have waited so long for an opportunity like this.
Yes, no, listen. I love it, of course.
How glorious it would be, Lord.
I see the glory. You think I can see the glory? Here's my problem. I have this little boy. He's my son, basically. And if I am not the one to challenge him to a duel, someone else will, and he will be killed.
I don't know. I don't have an answer.
Are you suggesting that you would challenge this little one to a duel?
Not
to
much of a
lose
challenge.
On purpose?
me what your challenge is flat. I would lose on purpose. Enough people have died to keep this boy alive. You see, I barely know him. I'm not going to lay down my life for one duper sweetly, certainly. But I did make a vow to protect him, so I'm trying to think of how to do that.
You would either lose on purpose or you would be defeated by this little guy. Lorovith,
wait, one moment. Give me 30 seconds to think.
You see Duber Sweetleaf approach you and say,
sir, you don't... I wish you wouldn't do that. You don't need to... I can hold off my own. I do possess some magic. I know I may not look like much,
you're magical, Duba. Everyone who sees your magic in every twinkle of your eye. Every time that dimple pops out, everyone sees the magic of
Duba. Pops out? That's not what dimples do.
Pops in, I get. No, it's like...
Actually, mine do, sir.
He puts his thumb in his mouth and blows.
Good Lord.
Why is that cute?
Rictus. It's a feature of my people.
Rictus, will you duel this boy?
Lorvith, I don't want to kill a boy.
I know.
I'm not a boy. I am 65 years old.
Look at him.
He holds up his hands. 60, 60.
I'm this many.
Hey, you know what? It's Gracon. Yes, I'll find another way to protect the boy, but no, I can't deny that there's no more worthy foe here, and it would be quite glorious. Yes! Glorious.
In this contest, in this final battle between us,
in this glorious hallowed place, let the battle wage on!
The battle of hallowed glory and honor begin.
Two vicious foes! Big meaty men slapping meat. Slapping meat! Former lovers turn friends. Only one can live.
Only one will carry the torch. I can hardly wait, Lorovith.
And he sticks out his hand with the grimoire on it.
And I do the same and clasp wrists.
Hell yes. It's fucking Arnold and the other guy.
Sucker punch right then. Pop.
Sucker punch him in the face?
Sucker punch so hard his head pop off.
Give me an attack roll.
No, I'm not going to do that, Griffin. It's against the rules of the Conclave.
Oh, okay. Well, you don't sucker punch him then.
nice try.
As you clasp hands with Gracon, you see a silvery sort of viney pattern begin to spread across the back of your grimoire that reaches down across the back of your hand and meets a similar pattern with his, meeting in a silver bramble between the two of your hands. There is a faint light that emits from the two of you, and as you release your hands, you can see that you are marked. Tomorrow morning, you will compete in a duel to the death with your greatest rival.
Maximum Fun,
a worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows,
supported
directly
by you.